For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. France says it would not recognise Catalonia if it declares independence from Spain. The French government also insists secession would mean expulsion from the European Union. Catalan leader Carles Puigdemont is expected to address the regional parliament on Tuesday after an independence referendum Madrid says was illegal. Turkey and the US have suspended most visa services to each other after an employee at the American consulate in Istanbul was arrested. Turkish authorities held the man over alleged links to the cleric the Turkish government believes orchestrated last summer's failed coup attempt. Jack Parrock reports.
The two statements suspending visas, one from the US and one from Turkey, looked basically the same and say they're reassessing the commitment to security of one another's governments. The arrested Turkish citizen, who was working at the US consulate in Istanbul, is suspected of having links to Fethullah Gulen, the cleric who's in exile in the States, who Turkey wants the American government to extradite back, believing he's responsible for planning the failed coup attempt of July 2016.
The fifth round of Brexit talks is underway in Brussels, the last leg of negotiations before a crucial EU summit later this month. For the UK to get its wish of starting trade talks soon, the EU says a miracle is required. Kevin Ozebeck reports.
The UK's hope is to get the leaders of the 27 EU states to sign off on beginning trade negotiations when they meet in a few weeks. But that looks unlikely, with the UK and EU still not agreeing on what to do with the border in Ireland, on how much money the UK will owe the EU, and how to handle the millions of UK citizens in the EU, and vice versa. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker says it will take miracles for the necessary progress to be made in time for the EU summit.
Several people have been reported dead after Ugandan Islamist rebels attacked a town in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. DRC authorities say rebels believed to be from the Allied Democratic Forces killed 10 people on the outskirts of Beni, a province near the border with Uganda. Michael Baleke reports from Kampala.
The final death toll is yet to be established, but local authorities in Eastern DR Congo say the attack happened in a night operation as the DRC military attempted to neutralize the Ugandan rebel group. The Allied Democratic Forces have increasingly been in the spotlight and stand accused of carrying out numerous attacks against civilians and government targets. Rights groups say the rebels, who are also believed to have links to terrorist group Al-Qaeda, have killed about 1,000 people in the same region over the last 3 years. Uganda has since embarked on a large-scale training of a specialized force to deal with the security threat across the country's western border. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has previously threatened to enter DR Congo's territory if the rebel group poses a threat. I'm Michael Baleke, reporting from Kampala.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Good evening to you. I hope you're well this Monday, October 9th, 2017. Beginning of a brand new week of Richie Allen shows, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio. Welcome to the programme. Good to have your company.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Yes, do not adjust your radio sets. I am Irish. Didn't Arsenio Hall say something like that many moons ago? Welcome, welcome, welcome. You can tweet at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter with any comments during the programme. Got a really interesting programme lined up, I think, over the next couple of hours. I'll be joined live from California in the second hour by the hip-hop artist, the producer, the poet and media commentator, Anomaly. Interesting man, really interesting man, introduced to me by none other than Vivian Kubrick. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll be chatting about Vegas, of course, a week on. We'll talk about Take a Knee. We'll talk about spirituality. We'll get into a lot with Anomaly, who's got a huge social media following. Very interested in that, in this day and age, with everything that's going on with social media. So Anomaly joins me in the second hour. And of course, if there's anything you'd like to say to him, you can say it through me. Tweet at Richie Allen Show, email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. I tell you, lovely day today. Lovely. Would I go as far as to call it a strawberry? No, you don't say strawberry. That's a strawberry spring. What do they call an Indian summer? That's the one. Had to think there on my feet. Would I go as far as to say it's an Indian summer? Of course not. But it was nice today, and apparently it's going to be nice tomorrow. Meaning, we're all in good form. We're all in good form. We're live on davidicke.com. Check out davidicke.com for the stories covered on this programme and much more in-depth analysis. davidicke.com. Fab Radio in Manchester, of course, and richieallen.co.uk. However, thousands, literally thousands, tune in via the TuneIn radio app. I'm on there, and about 700,000 other radio channels, independent content creators, they're all on TuneIn radio as well. Right, lots to tell you about, don't I always say that? But there is a lot to tell you about. Cliche monster, Richie. There is a lot to tell you about, so we'll just dive right on in, and I will check the Twitter feed periodically to read out your tweets. Now, Brexit, or the UK leaving the European Union, that's been the basis of much of the UK's news channel programmes today, television and radio. The UK, allegedly, has set out how it could operate as an independent trading nation in the wake of Brexit, even, importantly, if there is no trade deal done or signed with Brussels. Today, the UK Prime Minister Theresa May told MPs that real and tangible progress had been made in Brexit talks. Funnily enough, though, the speech that May made today was leaked overnight. So before May delivered the speech at around about, what was it today, 4:30 UK time, 5 o'clock, something like that, before she'd even delivered it, Barnier and Juncker and Verhofstadt and all the tyrants in Brussels had been, well, they'd been contradicting the speech before she'd even delivered it. Anyway, she said, did the UK Prime Minister, the country must be prepared for every eventuality. They published papers on future trade and customs arrangements. Even May called for a unique and ambitious economic partnership with the EU, saying that it won't always be smooth, but the UK can prove the doomsayers wrong. You might remember she gave a speech in Florence a week or so ago. She gave assurances on payments to the EU and citizens' rights at that time. So because of that, today she said the ball is in the EU court. But Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn even said that no real progress had been made in the 15 months since the referendum. We'll hear from Corbyn in a minute. Before that, though, here's UK Prime Minister Theresa May.
A new, deep and special partnership between a sovereign United Kingdom and a strong and successful European Union is our ambition and our offer to our European friends. Achieving that partnership will require leadership and flexibility, not just from us, but from our friends, the 27 nations of the EU. And as we look forward to the next stage, the ball is in their court, but I'm optimistic it will receive a positive response. Because what we are seeking is not just the best possible deal for us, but I believe that will also be the best possible deal for our European friends too. So while, of course, progress will not always be smooth, by approaching these negotiations in a constructive way, in a spirit of friendship and cooperation, and with our sights firmly set on the future, I believe we can prove the doomsayers wrong.
Yeah, but before she'd even delivered that speech today, the European Union bigwigs were saying that there hasn't been enough progress on certain issues, like citizens' rights, like Northern Ireland, like the hard border, and because of that, real progress is going to be slow. So she's being undermined at every turn, May. Or is she? More on that in a minute. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn obviously got a chance to respond to what Theresa May was saying and had said. This is what Corbyn said.
The Florence speech, in fact, demonstrated the scale of the mess the government is making of these negotiations. 15 months on from the referendum, we're still no clearer what the future of this country will look like. Rather than fighting over their own jobs, the reality is that millions of people's jobs and living standards depend on the success of these negotiations. If this government can't negotiate a deal for Britain, they should make way for a team that can.
Yeah. Now, Faisal Islam is the political editor of Sky News, and he provides a very interesting analysis of not only what Jeremy Corbyn said today, but what Corbyn and Labour are trying to do. You don't often get, I don't know, cutting-edge analysis from a Sky News political editor. But listen to what Islam says about what Corbyn and Labour are doing.
You're seeing a different approach from the Labour Party on this Brexit issue. Not so much on Brexit itself, but trying to leverage the perceived competence or lack thereof in the government on Brexit negotiations as a political weapon. I think hitherto they've avoided this. They don't want to be seen to be attacking Brexit. There are a number of Labour voters who voted to leave. They are sensitive to the idea of coming in behind the government and supporting things generally. But I think you're starting to see a departure from that strategy as they see some political gain in pointing out what they see, which is 15 months, I think Jeremy Corbyn said, of wasted time and negotiations in a, quote, mess. So that is an important development politically over the next 3 months, to see that the Labour Party and Jeremy Corbyn will attack the government on what they see as a shambles in the negotiation. That creates some distance, some clear water, and makes things a little bit more complicated. Some Tory MPs had actually privately been relying on what they perceive as Jeremy Corbyn's private hard Brexiteer-ness, if you like. He's always been a bit of a sceptic about some aspects of the European Union. It seems now he's willing to fight the Conservative government on their conduct of the negotiations, if not on the concept of Brexit itself. And that we haven't had much from Mr. Corbyn before.
Now, they are attacking the notion of Brexit. They are. Islam said they're not doing that yet, but they are. Yvette Cooper, the wife of Ed Balls, I'm not being a misogynist, she's more than the wife of Ed Balls, of course. She heads up the Home Affairs Select Committee. She's a Labour politician. She's a Blairite. And she stood against Corbyn when Corbyn first ran for the leadership of the Labour Party a couple of years ago. So because she's heading up the Home Affairs Select Committee, she was in Brussels this morning, firmly on the side of the European Union. The EU are confused, she said. They see the squabbling at government cabinet level, she said. They don't know who's going to be in charge in a few months, she said. There's no clarity. This woman is an unashamed Blairite. She's in Brussels, and I spoke at length yesterday on Sunday View about how the European Union is actually negotiating with the Labour Party as well, remember. And the Labour Party is Her Majesty's opposition party. Could do a whole show on that, Her Majesty. We'll do that another time. So why are they doing that? Whatever you think of the Conservative Party, they're the elected government of today. So you have Yvette Cooper in Brussels meeting with European Union officials. And that's what's going on. Now, Jeremy Corbyn, in the meantime, has seen the media coverage of him change. Think about it. Have a look at it. It's not too subtle to me, but it might be subtle in terms of his supporters might not be able to see it. The media has definitely changed its tune on Corbyn, because Corbyn has seen a way to power. And the way to power is to prevent the United Kingdom leaving the European Union, number one, or number two, get a deal that isn't really a Brexit. It'll be Brexit in name only. You know, we'll say we're leaving, but we'll have some associate membership where we're still subject to rules and regulations concerning movement of people and all of that. So Corbyn has seen the finish line and has sacrificed every principle he ever had. And the UK media, because it suits the agenda, has changed its tune on Corbyn. Believe me, I'm not making it up. Watch the way Corbyn is covered on Sky, BBC and others now compared to the way he was covered before the election. And I'm going to I'm going to venture a little bit. It won't be long till some of Rupert Murdoch's newspapers declare for Corbyn. I'm telling you. Watch it. Watch it closely. Of course Labour are attacking the result. Faisal Islam is right. They're not attacking the negotiations. They're attacking the result. But there isn't much to attack. Because as I mentioned a few minutes ago, Theresa May has already agreed to pay them an exit bill of sorts. And by doing that, she kind of capitulated, didn't she? Now, Jacob Rees-Mogg, he of the terminological inexactitude comments, Tory Toff, who's been in the news lately quite a bit, and he seems to be genuinely in favour of the UK leaving in totality. Well, Jacob Rees-Mogg even agrees with me in that May went too far in offering that money, however much it turns out to be. Here's Jacob Rees-Mogg on Sky today.
The ball is firmly in the European Commission's court. The Prime Minister has gone as far as she could reasonably go, to some extent further than I would have wished her to go, in offering a generous and comprehensive deal to the European Union. If they reject it, then it would indicate a stubbornness and obduracy on their part, which would indicate they probably didn't want a deal.
Well, they say that there are strict guidelines how these negotiations should go, and some of those guidelines haven't yet been met, such as agreement on the European budget payments by the UK.
Well, these aren't strict guidelines. These are guidelines they've invented for themselves. It's not like Ofcom tells Sky that it can't have expletives on the television before 9 o'clock in the evening. It's that the European Union has said, this is how we will negotiate, we won't do it any other way. But that's their own invention.
We have agreed to doing it that way.
We have said that we will enter into discussions in good faith, but it's not for them to set the terms of negotiation for the other side, that we're entitled to negotiate on the basis we want to negotiate. They are not the superior in this. This is a negotiation between equals, and their guidelines are the European Council's guidelines to Barnier, not black letter law.
Mogg is spot on. Why would they be allowed to dictate the terms of negotiation in terms of payments and all that? They've adopted the line, we're going to halt progress whenever we feel like it, unless you do what we want, which is a bullying, tyrannical way to behave. And of course, bullies only understand one thing, stand up to them first, face them down second, and then third of all, leave them standing there. Just walk away. But many times we said it on this programme, Theresa May doesn't want to leave the European Union. She doesn't. Neither does Philip Hammond, that goes without saying. Neither does Boris Johnson. And I was thinking about this today at length, observing all of this. What we are seeing is a televised farce. Because apart from a couple of Tories, apart from a few Labour MPs, there isn't anybody in a position of prominence really committed to getting the UK out of the European Union. What we have from Barnier and Juncker and all the rest of them, the fat cats as they've been called, the unelected bureaucrats, they want to stall. So if we had real democracy and a real government of the people, by the people and for the people, we just leave, right? And many times are we going to say this, you'd walk away, you'd pass the repeal bill, you'd tell Brussels the charade is over, and you'd say, listen, from now on in, we're going to fish our waters, we're going to manufacture our steel, we are going to mine our coal, by the way. We are, because global warming is a farce. We're going to mine our coal, build our steel, fish our waters, make cars, build houses. That's what we're going to do. And we will boom. And by the way, any individual EU country thinking about imposing any tariffs on our goods, well, if you think that, you've got another thing coming. There's a massive trade deficit that favours us. So what we're witnessing is a farce. I've put this to economists, not only on this programme, people like Steve Keane, but privately to people whom I've known for years who won't go on the radio. People I've known at companies like Friends First in Ireland and other places. They've said, absolutely right, Richie. You would tell them, it's over. It's over. Goodbye. Piss off. We're done. We now do what we want, how we want and when we want to suit our economy and to suit the people of this country. And that's not a pipe dream, or that's not naive, or it's not the, you know, the ranting of somebody who doesn't understand what he's talking about. I know exactly what I'm talking about. You walk away from them. Negotiating your way out of a tyrannical system is a joke. Whoever what kidnap victim ever negotiated themselves out of a dungeon or out of a cellar? If you see an opening, you get out. It's a farce what we're witnessing. May doesn't give a damn one way or the other. Corbyn, absolutely anti-European Union to his underpants. And now sees a way to power through scuppering Brexit or getting a Brexit that doesn't matter a damn because we won't really have left. And I'll give you an idea of how much of a farce this is. Bernard Jenkin is a Conservative MP. You might have heard of him. He was on RT over the weekend and he said the UK Treasury is working with the European Union against the government to deliberately make things difficult for the UK negotiation team. He was very explicit about this. And if he's right, there's no reason why he isn't right. It is treachery. This is Bernard Jenkin. In fact, he wasn't on RT. He was speaking with Adam Bolton on Sky News.
I am not advocating anybody be appointed or sacked. I'm only interested in the policy.
No, but you're attacking the Treasury. The man in charge of the Treasury is Philip Hammond.
I think the Treasury has got a mindset that is very pro-Remain.
Including the Chancellor.
I think the Chancellor, I'm not talking about the Chancellor, I'm talking the Treasury as an institution, has got a very Remain mindset. But they were very discredited after the referendum when their dire forecasts didn't come true. We were meant to have another half a million unemployed by now, and employment's carried on growing.
So why wouldn't May hose out the Treasury Department? You see, if May was genuine, if she was real, and if she was committed to taking the UK out of the European Union and the single market and the customs union, she would hose down the Treasury, wouldn't she? Every one of them. Ridden out of town on a rail. You've been working with the European Union. That's treason. Now, it's not like wartime treason. We're not talking executions here. But you fire them and get rid of them. Publicly humiliate them. So that's the latest on the European Union fiasco. What is it? 22 minutes past the hour. Tell you what I'm going to do, right? I'm going to have a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about foster care. A woman called Sarah Anderson has launched a legal claim to argue for workers' rights for people who work as foster carers. You won't believe this. I'll tell you more on it when we come back. This is Monday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Keep the tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show. Back in exactly 2.5 minutes.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now. Join in tonight's discussion by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
Welcome back to the programme. Do you know we've got centuries worth of coal in terms of reserves and deposits? Centuries worth. Imagine what you could do with that in terms of firing up UK industry again. And you know, people have been so beaten down and so brainwashed by the mainstream media. They don't understand that what I'm saying is absolutely true. We fish our waters. We build our steel. We make cars and lorries and airplanes and helicopters. And you're talking hundreds of thousands of jobs. Good jobs. Well-paid jobs. And what you see then is you see communities. You see genuine regeneration and rejuvenation of communities as people have all the money they need to pay their rent, to feed themselves. Staggering this, how simple it is. You know, you could make changes in the morning, in a couple of hours, that would guarantee the prosperity of everybody in this country and their great, 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 great grandkids. In the click of a finger, you could do it. Who are these people working for? I suppose that's why we do this programme. Who are they listening to? Right, let's move on. This is some story this. Heard this today a couple of times through the day. A foster carer is arguing for workers' rights for people in her role. She's launched a legal claim. Her name is Sarah Anderson and she's used by Hampshire County Council but doesn't have the rights of a worker, such as holiday pay or discrimination protection. Now, the BBC have described this as possibly a landmark case, and they say she will fight to have foster carers classified so they will be entitled to the same benefits. The council, Hampshire Council, says the law is clear and foster carers are not workers. Ms. Anderson has been a carer for 10 years, a foster carer for 10 years, but has been engaged by Hampshire County Council for 4 of those 10 years. During that time, her and her husband have provided a home for 10 children. Do you want to hear her? Here she is speaking with BBC News. Do me a favour, listen carefully to what she says. Sarah Anderson, foster carer, looking for workers' rights for foster carers.
The trouble is with foster care is that nobody really knows much about it. We're either fantastic angels or we're kind of child-beating, you know, if you watch the telly, sort of money grabbers. You know, nobody really understands what we truly do. I think they think that little orphan Annie turns up on the doorstep and we all live happily ever after, and that we're marvellous because of it. Nothing could be further from the truth in today's fostering landscape. The children are getting more challenging. We are asked to do a huge raft of things now that we wouldn't have before.
Like what? Give us an example of a day in your life.
A day in my life can be involved with the child exploitation teams. We could have a child that's absconded, so we're up all day and all night and we're not on shift work. We will involve ourselves with the police, with the social services out of hours team. We will then the next day be involved in the mental health teams. We will be involved in school, obviously. It's a non-stop kind of, you know, job. And that's not to say that the people like Martin who have younger ones have any less to do. It is a full-time occupation these days. Does that mean we don't love and adore and care for our children? Of course it doesn't. But we want to be recognised for what we do and be protected.
Mm. Did you hear what she said there? Right, let me tell you, I did a bit of research. They get paid across the country a minimum of £450 per week per child. That's a minimum. It's more like £500 plus per child, because that's the basic. 450 is the basic, right? There are things added on. So it's more like 500 quid per child per week. And I bet you didn't know this. It's tax free. It's tax free. So that's £25,000 a year tax free. It's a professional career, a professional occupation, she said. Now the money and the figures I got from a number of sources, including different adoption agencies. Now, I have no idea who Sarah Anderson is, the woman who you just heard from there. None. Or what she's really like, I don't know. But on the basis of the BBC interview, only, and that's all I can go on, I wouldn't put a child anywhere near her. Nowhere near her. And I'm not naive, right? I accept that some children, obviously they need safe homes, right? I know that. I know there are children and they're in very bad situations. And that I know the households that take in those children need financial assistance. But by making it a professional career, which it is now, could you make the argument, dear listener? I'll be interested in your opinion on this. Could you make the argument that by making it a professional career, it's basically making an asset or a commodity out of children? No, it isn't. It's making an asset or a commodity out of extremely vulnerable children. So women like Sarah Anderson, they see children as £500 a week. A means to an end, really. You know, it's a filthy, rotten system. And most children in foster care shouldn't be there. We know this. Some do. The minority, as far as I can tell, do need to be taken out of their home because their parents have got terrible problems or there is genuine abuse or whatever. I understand that. But when you see people seeing children as a commodity or as an asset, of course you've got people looking at these bus stop advertising signs telling you that you can earn £500 a week as a foster carer, a foster parent. So of course you've got people looking at that and they see children as ching ching, ching ching, ching ching. Do you know if you take care of three, that's £1,500 a week tax free. What a filthy, rotten system it is. And as we've pointed out on this programme so many times, with our guests, it is a £1 billion a year industry in this country. 27 minutes to the top of the hour. Monday, October 9th, 2017. The world has gone mad. Lunatic asylum, right? I was not listening, to Piers Morgan earlier on. I know he's detestable. And he is, or at least he represents everything that's wrong with the media. I know. But I got a laugh this morning. He co-presents, does Piers, a breakfast TV show. He's a co-presenter. And today, he had a gender-fluid guest on. Yeah. Tabitha, or Tate, Downs King, whenever Tabitha wakes up some morning, Tabitha feels like Tate, so becomes Tate. Some mornings Tate wakes up and feels like Tabitha. Identifies as gender fluid. One day I'm Tabitha, another day I'm Tate. And Tabitha, or Tate, or whatever the hell, was brought on to whatever it's called now, Good Morning Britain, or whatever it's called, with Piers Morgan. And explained to Piers Morgan that she or he dresses according to which gender he or she identifies as on any given day. What made me laugh was, Morgan asked which toilets would he, she, or they, or them, or it, or whatever, would use in a public place. Tabitha said she would use both, even making use of the urinal. Now, Tabitha was born with a vagina. Have a listen. She explains, or he explains, or whatever it is, explains to Piers Morgan. This is funny.
Most people don't even recognise that I'm not exactly a biological man when I am male.
Right.
And also, I just scurry into the cubicles. I'm never at the urinals, to be honest with you.
Mm. No, no, it's not about scaring.
Occasionally,
it's about,
I am.
It's, about, it's not really about scaring. It's
really?
More about...
Occasionally, I use the urinals, but, you know, not often, because there's the old people staring at you, making sure they're not, that you're not looking at their penis, and you're just like...
You use you, but how do you do that physically?
There's a prosthetic penis that you can pee through.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a prosthetic penis. We have an old saying in Ireland. It's a famous Irish saying. It's been around for about 11 centuries. And it goes, will you ever fuck off out of that, will you? Will you ever fuck off? You're not gender fluid. If you have a vagina, you're a woman. If you have a penis, you're a man. And if you have to use a funnel, stop calling it a prosthetic device, by the way. It's a funnel. A funnel. You're a woman. You're not gender fluid. If you can morph a penis into reality and slap it on the table in front of me, good Jesus, and then wave a wand or wave your penis and it becomes a vagina again, only then are you gender fluid, right? Until you can do that, use the ladies. Use the ladies. And don't be using a funnel to piss into a urinal in a man's toilet. It's lunacy. It's lunacy. I'm not saying it for effect or for laughs. It is lunacy. And it gets worse. In the Daily Telegraph today. Ah, oh, the people behind the census, the national census, are considering removing the question about whether you're a man or a woman over discrimination against transgender and non-binary people. It's true. The headline, census considering removal of sex question over discrimination against transgender and non-binary people. British citizens may not have to reveal their gender to the government in the next census following a review. The Office for National Statistics has undertaken research as to whether the 2021 census should ask questions about people's gender identity as well as their biological sex. So when you do a census, you get to tick male or female, but they want to bring in gender identity. This follows protests that asking about people's gender is discriminatory. Protests from who? The funnel pissers? Are the funnel pissers up in arms about the 2021 census? I'm not doing the census unless you put in a whole raft of gender identities that I can choose from. The article goes on to say, dear listener, they surveyed 1,085 people and only 14 of them said the gender identity should be included as an additional topic in the census. 14 out of 1,085. 14 as a percentage of 1,085, dear listener. I'm not Rain Man, I had to get a calculator. 1.2%. So I say to the 1.2%, fuck off. Moving on. It's exactly 21 minutes to the top of the hour. This is another story. David was telling me about this today. I'm sorry for swearing. David was telling me about this today. Dove has apologised after releasing a series of racist images that appeared to show a black woman turning white after using their soap. The Facebook advertising campaign used a series of three images showing a black woman pulling off her t-shirt to reveal a white woman underneath her skin And then the third image shows the white woman undressing to reveal an Asian woman. Dove tweeted, "We deeply regret the offence this caused." Well, the progressive Twitterati exploded and the Twitter storm began. Racist, 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 racist. I'm triggered, racist. I'm devastated. We saw women, white women, black women, Latino women on BBC, on ITV, on Channel 4 and Sky Today saying they were deeply offended by the ad. Deeply offended. Racism, racism, racism. Dove is racist. I'm never again buying Dove shower gel. Racist, racist bastards. So what did consumer affairs writer Harry Wallop think? Great name, by the way, Harry Wallop. I like Harry Wallop. Here he is on Sky News. This is what he had to say about Dove's racism, racist bastards.
But a lot of the outrage was all about the first 2 seconds of what was only a 3 second, gosh, it wasn't even an advert, it was a GIF. So it did indeed show what appeared to be a black woman using maybe, I don't know, Dove soap to make herself cleaner and purer and turning herself white. But what we then didn't see when it went all around the social media was then the white woman changing her top to then turn into what appears to be possibly a Latino woman or a Southern European woman. So if it, the order had been reversed and we'd started off with, I don't know, the Latino woman turning into a white woman, would that have been better? It was all taken out of context and it was taken from those two stills, which undoubtedly were very racially insensitive. But we didn't see the full 3 seconds because our attention span is so goldfish and gnat-like at the moment in the age of social media. We can't even scroll through to the end of 3 seconds.
Give Harry Wallop a banana. Oh, that might be racist. It can't be racist, though, because he's white. He's right, isn't he? What lunacy. The advertisement showed the white girl turning into an Asian girl. So I would make the argument, and I've been around a while. I'll be 43 this Christmas. The ad looked like how do you say it? It's a French word, I should know. An homage to the Michael Jackson video for Black and White. Do you remember that? Or Black or White. If you're thinking about my brother, it don't matter if you're black or white. Macaulay Culkin was in it. Yes, I can sing. I'm well aware of it. So you had Macaulay Culkin, you had all these people. What was all the fuss about? The white girl turned into an Asian girl after the black girl turned into a white girl. It's obvious to me that what Dove is saying is everybody should use our products. Right? But it was a Twitter storm, which, as many more learned men and women than me have said, is all about scaring people into not speaking their minds on anything, lest they be ridiculed, ostracised, or labelled as racist. Diversity, they say. Fairness, they say. Equality, they say. So long as you live like they do, and so long as you speak as they want you to speak, you're okay. It's blatant hypocrisy, but it's more sinister, of course, than just hypocrisy. It's rooted in cultural Marxism, isn't it? It's the takeover of society through divide and conquer. They're making it illegal to question diversity, or even enforced diversity. I should say that, enforced diversity, because this is unnatural. You know, the hegemony of minority cultures at the expense of the majority. It's not happened naturally. It's been foisted upon us, like it or lump it. And if you lump it, we'll call you a racist. That's what the PC agenda does. It silences those who would dissent. So Dove put an ad out. Black girl takes off a top. There's a white girl underneath it. She takes off her top. There's an Asian girl underneath it. How in the name of sweet Jesus is there anything racist about that? Racist. I see racists, they're everywhere. Some of them don't even know they're racist. Moving on, 16 minutes to the top of the hour. Moving on to the cover-up of Westminster paedophile rings and institutional child abuse. MI5, obviously, intelligence agency, Wait for this, dear listener. You might not have come across this. MI5 was made aware that prosecutors lied that child sex abuse claims against Cyril Smith were unlikely to lead to a prosecution. Prosecutors knew Cyril Smith could be successfully prosecuted and banged up, but they lied to the intelligence agency MI5 and said they didn't have enough evidence on him. Wow. Detectives had said the sordid claims about Cyril Smith's abuse of boys in 1970 stood up. MI5 heard the Director of Public Prosecutions stopped the case. And this is according to the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse. They heard this today. And they heard how Smith was allegedly able to target boys in Rochdale institutions. Because prosecutors who knew what he was up to and had evidence up to their eyes that they could use against him were telling MI5, well, we really don't have enough to get a prosecution. So among the many things the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse is looking into, it's looking into offences at Cambridge House Hostel and the Knoll View Residential School in Rochdale, where Cyril Smith was governor. And back in 1970, there was a police investigation into Smith, and it concluded he was raping boys, and that he was hiding behind a veneer of respectability. However, at the time, there was a director of public prosecutions called Sir Norman Skelhorn, and he was a motherless bastard. Because despite having evidence to secure a prosecution against Cyril Smith, Norman Skelhorn, the director of public prosecutions, said, lying through his teeth, he said, we're unlikely to win if we go to court against Smith. How wonderful. The Director of Public Prosecutions, where have we heard about the Director of Public Prosecutions recently? Ah, yes, that's right. Another former Director of Public Prosecutions, Ken MacDonald, has spent most of the last few weeks undermining Chief Constable Mike Veal and his report into the allegations against Ted Heath. He's been very, very vocal, has former DPP Ken MacDonald. Very noisy, former DPP Ken MacDonald. I wonder what old Ken thinks about the corruption of the office he once held, eh? Eh? Norman Skelhorn. Burning in hell, hopefully. He might still be alive. It's just incredible, isn't it? I played you this yesterday, so I'm going to play it again. I dug it out. I've not been playing it. This is Norman Tebbit, Lord Tebbit, speaking on BBC Breakfast in 2014.
At that time, I think most people would have thought that the establishment, the system, was to be protected. And if a few things had gone wrong here and there, that it was more important to protect the system than to delve too far into them. Now, that view, I think, was wrong then, and it is spectacularly shown to have been wrong because the abuses have grown.
Do you think there was a big political cover-up at the time back 30 years ago?
I think there may well have been, but it was almost unconscious. It was the thing that people did at that time.
You didn't talk about these kinds of things?
You didn't talk about those sort of things. It's not the sort of thing that people did. Not even, if I may say so, television journalists.
Yeah, the journalists were asleep. There most probably was a massive political cover-up, said Norman Tebbit. Of course there was. And Veal's report has only been out since Thursday. We've not seen the entire report yet. It's been sent to the inquiry, the Alexis J inquiry into child abuse, of course. But they've been attacking it and attacking it and attacking it and attacking it. And today we learn that a former DPP lied about evidence against Cyril Smith, could have had him prosecuted and banged up, and God knows how many boys Smith went on to rape. because of that decision. This is your Richie Allen Show. It's live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio and richieallen.co.uk.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back to the programme. Do bookmark davidicke.com and fabradiointernational.com as well as richieallen.co.uk. Welcome back. Nice to be with you. 8 minutes to the top of the hour for Monday, October 9th, 2017. First show of the week. Got an interesting week lined up for you, so I have. A lot of interesting tweets on Twitter concerning Dove and concerning transgender prosthetic penises. So go to twitter.com where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, one word, all one word, in there. And if you do that, you'll see what other people are tweeting towards me, or tweeting at me even. Found this very interesting today. The Harvey Weinstein story. The Weinstein Company. Now Meryl Streep, who worked with Weinstein a few times, gave a statement to the Huffington Post saying that she was appalled by the disgraceful news about Weinstein and his harassment of women. And she went on to praise those women who raised their voices to expose the abuse. She even labelled them as heroes. And a number of other famous actresses and actors came out to speak out on Weinstein today. Emma Thompson, Mark Ruffalo, Seth Rogen among them, saying similar things. Apparently, there's been a big debate on American television about the abuse of power in Hollywood and beyond. And a number of commentators on national television in America have been bitching about the fact that the, you know, many of those people associated with the Democrat, with the Democratic Party, have been very reluctant to get involved and to condemn what it is that Weinstein did or was doing. Meryl Streep, interestingly enough, once called him God. And I suppose what I'm about to say now will be controversial, as pretty much everybody I know loves Meryl Streep. She can do no wrong. Gifted actress. Multiple Oscar winner. Considered maybe the ultimate exponent of her craft, maybe. At least in the last few decades anyway. And I do confess that when I see Streep in films, I like her. She's obviously very good. But you know, when you learn that Streep worked for Weinstein a few times and once called him God, you do get a bit cynical when you hear Streep coming out saying that she was appalled by the disgraceful things that he was doing and the abuse that he was carrying out. Because I suppose as long as he was harassing young girls, but he was casting Meryl Streep, she could overlook his predatory behaviour, maybe. Is that unfair, that? Is it a bit harsh, maybe? You know, she could overlook that behaviour. Well, it suited her. But as soon as he was outed by somebody else, she rushes to condemn him. And I find that a bit strange. And I don't like it. And a number of others who've been out on social media today. Now look, Harvey Weinstein, as far as I know anyway, you know, he's no Jimmy Savile, right? But it's funny how they're coming out of the woodwork today, people who worked with him, if they felt that he was sexually harassing women back in the day, did they put their careers before their morals and ignore what he was doing because it suited them, right? 4.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Now, David told me about this earlier on. Speaking with David earlier, and he said, did you see this story, Richie? I said, no, I didn't. I think it was covered on davidicke.com today. I mean, this is madness. We talk about madness all the time, and the things that become... Sorry, the things that come to be accepted. The governor of California, Jerry Brown, I missed this completely. He signed a bill on Friday that lowers from a felony to a misdemeanor the crime of deliberately exposing your sexual partner to HIV without disclosing that you're infected. So it was a felony to have sex with somebody, unprotected sex. You've got HIV. You have unprotected sex with them and you don't tell them. So you are knowingly putting them at risk. That was a felony, right? And I would have said, absolutely. If somebody could be proven, A, to know that they are HIV positive, they must know, of course, and they would have been to hospitals and had their treatment, not their treatment, they would have went to have their examination, then they would have been diagnosed as HIV positive. And then, presumably, they would have been put on retro antiviral drugs, right? So you know you have HIV. So as far as I'm concerned, if you expose somebody to that deliberately and they don't know it, it should be a felony, right? Well, Jerry Brown thinks it shouldn't be. The measure also applies, the new measure, to those who give blood without telling the blood bank they're HIV positive. What's the reasoning behind this? Well, Scott Weiner and Todd Gloria, two Democrat or Democratic politicians in California. Scott Weiner is a senator and Todd Gloria is a lowly assemblyman. They wrote the bill that's been signed by Jerry Brown. And their reasoning for this is that modern medicine allows people who have HIV to live longer lives and nearly eliminates the possibility of transmission. Nearly. So it's a misdemeanor now. This is what Scott Weiner said. He must be a funnel pisser as well. He said, today, California took a major step toward treating HIV as a public health issue instead of treating people living with HIV as criminals. But nobody was treating people who live with HIV as criminals. I know somebody who's HIV positive. And nobody treats them as if they're a criminal. This is madness. He said HIV should be treated like all other serious infectious diseases. Well, it can't be treated like all other serious infectious diseases. In terms of, if you have unprotected sex as somebody who is HIV positive with somebody who isn't, there's a good chance they will become HIV positive. And that is a crime. Unbelievable, isn't it? Only because it's David, I would have laughed him off the phone this morning and said, no, no. Jerry Brown is not available for comment, the governor of California. So it's a madhouse. It's a madhouse. I'm going to finish with this. It's exactly the top of the hour. We'll be speaking with the musician and the media commentator, the poet, the producer, Anomaly shortly. Can't wait for that. We'll do that in a few minutes. Before we do that, though, here's a story which broke just as I was coming on air today. Three teenage brothers should be taken from their mother and put into care, having developed a narcissistic cult mentality. And that's according to a High Court judge. The boys, who were not sent to school and suffered from a lack of food and health care, were led to believe they shouldn't socialise or go outside. Their mother, who cannot be identified, had mental health issues. And what's really interesting about this is the next few lines. Listen to what the psychotherapist said. They said the brothers had formed a group identity and saw themselves as intellectually superior. Justice Hayden, the judge, said the children had been placed in temporary residential care while further decisions could be made about their futures. He said they should not be returned to their mother. Teenagers. Social services said the three lads had come to believe there was no purpose in attending school, leaving the home, or socialising with others, while two psychotherapists said they saw themselves as separate to the rest of the world. They said a cult mentality had developed. One of them said it was a narcissistic cult. Two of the boys were said to have communicated with each other in a secret language. The court was also told about the reward system, a strict reward system imposed on the boys. Achievement of particular tasks enabled time on the computer or an opportunity to pet and stroke the cat. This was the reward system. The boys are now in the care of Wandsworth Council Social Services. That came in on the BBC just as I was coming to air. It's 2 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. We're off to California in a couple of minutes' time. We'll be joined by Anomaly. I'm really looking forward to speaking with him. Keep the tweets coming in, at Richie Allen Show. Let me know what you're thinking about these stories. And if there's something you'd like me to discuss with Anomaly, you know how to do it. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk or tweet simply at Richie Allen Show. Have some music back in a minute.
Start trying to step on.
Yeah, you might be asking, why is there no anomaly music, Richie? We'll sort that out a bit later on in the programme. That was Blur and Country House, 6.5 minutes past the hour. It is Monday's programme. And just to let you know, the very, very exceptional and very interesting Margaret Oliver, Maggie Oliver, retired detective, who did so much to highlight the Rochdale sexual abuse scandal. Maggie will be on the programme on Thursday for an extended interview. Looking forward to that. She wrote a very interesting article in yesterday's Mail on Sunday where she was very critical of the attacks on Chief Constable Mike Veal, who, of course, headed up Operation Conifer. He's the man who basically authored the report on the allegations of sex abuse by former Prime Minister Edward Heath, who, of course, died some years ago. So Maggie Oliver joins the programme later on in the week. Got some terrific guests lined up for you this week, so I do. And our only guest today is somebody I've been looking forward to speaking with for some time. Now, I haven't come across too many people recently who have used social media as skillfully as he has used to promote his music and his poetry and his ideas. I think he's got it down cold. And I'm interested in that because I want to kick off talking to him about the attack, the ongoing attack on the independent media by those people who own the big internet companies, Google and YouTube. So I want to talk about that because he's been hugely successful in promoting his own music and his own career on social media. Really, really, really good. I think there's a lesson there to be learned for talented artists, producers. There's a big lesson to be learned there by having a look at what he's done. As I mentioned at the top of the programme, he's a hip-hop artist, he's a poet, he's a producer, a media commentator, and he is a consultant as well, helping people to market themselves on social media. And he's hugely successful on Twitter, on Facebook particularly, and on YouTube as well. I was introduced to him by a mutual friend of ours, Vivian Kubrick, who said, you've got to get this guy on, Richie. He's interesting, he's got a different voice, and he'll suit your audience, and I'm sure he will. Let's welcome to the program. Before we do, his website is legendary.vision. That's www.legendary.vision to find out more about him. Let's welcome to our show live from California the one and only Anomaly. Anomaly, welcome to the program. How are you? Is he there? Are you there, my friend? Ah, there's been a problem, has there? I think there's a wee problem there. So what we'll do is we'll try and figure out what that wee problem is and we'll try and get him back. He's not getting any audio from me, he said. Right. That's a strange one.
Hello?
Hello, Anomaly. Are you there? No, he's getting nothing from me, is he? He can't hear me at all.
No audio coming through on my side.
Ah, right, he's not getting any audio. So what we're going to do then is we're going to try and figure out why that is. Shouldn't take too long. Reboot. Reboot solves everything, doesn't it? While we sort it out, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute, hopefully with Anomaly.
is your mind, full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper. Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Right, we seem to have a problem there, and I'm pretty sure it's on the end of Anomaly, because I've just done a couple of quick checks and I've called a couple of friends of mine and they're getting my feed loud and clear, but Anomaly can't. He's on a mobile device, which might be the problem, which surprises me. We'll get him onto his computer. Let's do that. Let's get onto your computer there. I've told him to get on his computer, get away from the mobile device, and that should make a big difference. Right, so in the meantime, we'll have to take some more music then. Not that we've had much music today. When we come back, we'll either have Anomaly, and if we don't, we'll do something else. That's the beauty of live radio. We'll think on our feet, all right? In the meantime, this is The Weeknd, and a song called Starboy. I like this. Back in a minute. And let's hope we have Anomaly with us back in exactly 3 minutes.
I'm trying to put you in the worst mood. P1 cleaner than your church shoes. Belly point two just to hurt you. All red lamp just to tease you. None of these toys on lease to. Made your whole year in a week to. Main bitch out of your league to. Side bitch out of your league to. House so empty, need a centerpiece. From ebony, cut that ivory into space.
like a bandit. Bought mama a crib and a brand new wagon. Now she hit the grocery shop looking lavish. Star Trek roof in the Wraith of Khan. Girls get loose when they hear the song. 100 on the dash, get me close to God. We don't pray for love, we just pray for cars. House so empty, need a centerpiece. 20 racks of table come from ebony. Cut that ever into skinny pieces. Then she clean up with her face, but I love my baby. You talking money, need a hearing aid. You talking about me, I don't see the shade. Switch out my side, I take any lane. Switch out my car if I kill any pain.
Starboy from The Weeknd on The Richie Allen Show. Let's check in with Anomaly. I think there's a problem here. We're having difficulties. I don't think there's any audio getting to him from us. And that is a problem. We're not connected yet. Let's try it again. And then we're going to have to give it a miss and do something else.
Hello.
Good evening, Anomaly. How are you? Nothing. Right, we have a big problem there. And I don't know what it is.
It went away, like right at the first second. It was there and then now there's nothing again.
And there's nothing there at all. No, there isn't anything there at all. This is live radio, eh? Right, there's nothing we can do about that other than move swiftly on. I did call a couple of friends of mine in the meantime and ask them, are they getting our feed? And they are. So, I don't know what's going on. So while we do a quick turnaround and do something completely different, here's music from The Killers. Music from The Killers. Back in a minute.
I did my best to notice when the call came down the line. Up to the platform of surrender. I was brought, but I was kind. And sometimes I get nervous when I see an open. Your eyes, clear your heart, cut the cord. Are we human?
answer.
Right, it's gone belly up then. We can't speak with Anomaly this evening anyway, which is a bit of a shame. I was looking forward to speaking with him, gave him an appropriate build-up, and it just all went bad, you know. So what are you going to do? He's a bit gutted, but we'll rearrange. And I will just type, I'm sending a message to somebody now, because one of the things I can do is I can engineer on the run, you see. I have a friend of mine who's an engineer, and he might be able to sort this out. But I've already called a couple of friends, and they're getting it loud and clear. They're hearing the feed from the Richie Allen Show, but poor old Anomaly there couldn't hear it. Couldn't hear a thing. The fact that other people can hear it when I call them suggests the problem isn't our end. Right, let me just do this now. Because I'm double-checking that. If you're just joining me, you're thinking, what's going on there? Sounds a bit mad there. We were due to speak with the rap artist, the hip-hop artist, Anomaly. And he's a producer as well. Very successful guy. He's very interested in the independent media. Connected to him by the lovely, it must be said, the wonderful Vivian Kubrick. Again, not name-dropping. I don't know Vivian, only through Twitter and making the programme. We've had a few conversations on Twitter. She said, you've got to get this guy on. And I've been watching him on YouTube, and I like him. I like the cut of his jib. I like the cut of his jib. But we can't speak today. There must be something to this Monday thing. Right. There must be something to this Monday idea. Things only go wrong on Monday, don't they? But, yeah. I think we might be struggling here. I'm just double-checking. I have an engineer on standby there who's going to give me a couple of little tips and a couple of little tweaks. And I've got friends of mine listening out for the audio. Hopefully they can hear the feed or get the feed and understand what's being said by me. But I've already done this with a couple of people, and they've said, yeah, we can hear you. But he couldn't, so I don't know what's going on. We're just going to have to move on and do something different. Something entirely different. Right, okay. Right, okay. We have a problem. More music. I've never played as many songs as this in a show. This might be only song number 3. More music while we figure out what the bloody hell is going on. And then we'll just have to go a different way. A different way, right, okay. Bon Jovi this time. I'm pulling music out of the system on the run. On the fly. So here's some Bon Jovi, and we'll sort something out then when we come back. Back in a minute.
Baby, you're all that I
Now as you close your eyes, know I've been thinking about you. While my mistress, she calls me to stand in her spotlight again. Tonight, I won't be alone. To know that don't mean I'm not lonely. I got nothing to prove for June that I died a dear friend.
Bon Jovi, I've got Forrest Gumps for friends. I have Trigger from Only Fools and Horses for friends. I phoned a couple of friends of mine on the old Skype and I said, let me know if you're getting my feed. And they said to me, both of them, you couldn't make this up, loud and clear, Richie, loud and clear. But they weren't getting my feed loud and clear. They were listening to the programme on the back. In the background, they were listening to it on their devices. I clearly said, when you're listening, when you're connected to me on Skype, are you getting the feed from the programme? Loud and clear, Rich. It's A-OK, mate. They weren't. It's a problem, my end. And it's not anything I can deal with. My engineer has been trying to access it remotely, but it will need a manual fix. It will need a physical presence fix, and that's going to be done tomorrow morning early. But sadly, we won't be able to hear from Anomaly today. That's just the way it is. Sadly. He's nice, though. He's a nice, he's a really good guy. He's like, fair enough. He's laughing. It's a Monday. We'll get him on tomorrow or Wednesday, whichever day suits him. And we'll crack on. We'll crack on with that when we can do it. Some interesting comments coming in there on Twitter, because I did drop the name, of Vivian Kubrick. And Vivian, by the way, directed the documentary. If you bought the DVD to The Shining, the Warner Brothers Collector's Edition, you got the making of The Shining documentary, which was shot by Vivian Kubrick herself. And I'm not just saying this, it's quite wonderful, because I've never been on a film set in my life. I've made television in London and up here, and I know all about TV sets and galleries and everything else, but I've never been anywhere near a movie set. But if you ever want to get some kind of a flavour of how unglamorous making films is, well, you could do two things. One, you could ask my friend Jean-Anne Crowley on Facebook. Jean-Anne will tell you there's nothing glamorous about it. How do you know, Richie? You were never on one. Well, I've known a few actresses and actors over the years. They've always said it's tough bloody work. Tough work. I'll give you a laugh, dear listener. Many moons ago, when I was studying TV and radio at Salford University, a couple of us at Salford University, we used to do weekend work for a provider of motor insurance. So this is one of the things I used to do. I've had a checkered history, a checkered life, goddamn. I've had a checkered life. After my moving from Ireland to Manchester the first time around with the future Mrs. Allen, I decided to return to third level education and do a postgraduate course in television and radio at Salford, because I obviously worked in radio and did well and had a good time and got a lot of experience and met a lot of people. But I thought, while we're over here, I'll... It might be good to get a qualification in something I didn't need a qualification in. But I thought, you know, the piece of paper might be something that might stand me in good stead. Anyway, it didn't. It doesn't matter. But anyway, long story short, we used to work at Direct Line. Wasn't going to mention them, but I'll mention them anyway. But we didn't stay there very long. But we did some weekend shifts answering the phones and selling car insurance, don't you know? This is a long time ago anyway. But around the corner from Direct Line was the old Granada Studios. And when I say around the corner, it was literally around the corner. Literally. You could walk out the front door of Direct Line, walk around the corner, and there was Granada Studios. And some of the girls, and I'm not being sexist here, it's true, some of the girls we used to work with, they were big Coronation Street fans. So they used to say on lunch breaks, why don't we walk around to the front gate, because you'll often see the young men and women of Coronation Street and the old men and women of Coronation Street walking in and out, and they're very good and they might stop and take a picture. The camera phones weren't in existence then. You had to have a real camera or one of those disposable things that came in the paper, you know, the cardboard thing. So we used to go down. And there was a man, and I'm not making this up, I don't, never have watched Coronation Street, so I don't know their real names, as in the actors' names and the actresses' names. But there was a man, and he played, and I think he still does play, a character called Roy Cropper, who used to have a cafe. And he was very, very nice, and he was very gregarious, and he used to stop and spend plenty of time speaking to people and chatting with them and answering their questions. One of the girls that worked with us, she was really keen on, she was at Salford University as well, and she was really keen on getting into TV, and she wanted to be an actress. And she said to him, what's it like? And he said, Jesus Christ, he said. He said, we get in around 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, and 5 days a week, sometimes six, we're still there at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the evening. And then he said, we're paid well enough now, he said, but there's nothing remotely easy about it, nor is there anything glamorous about it. He said, you might think it's glamorous, it isn't glamorous. It's not glamorous. So back to Vivian Kubrick. I have a way of telling stories. I go off on tangents. You're full of shit, Richie. I can hear you, I can hear you. But I go off on tangents. If you ever needed to know that making Hollywood films is not glamorous, watch the documentary about the making of The Shining, because it's brilliantly raw and you can feel the tension on set as Stanley Kubrick is at times giving out to the actress who plays Wendy. Who played Wendy in The Shining? It wasn't Shelley Duvall, was it? Was it Shelley Duvall? I'm doing a very quick search now. I'm always wrong, me. If I'm right, I'll be amazed. Shelley Duvall, no? No, it's not Shelley Duvall, is it? Was she in The Shining, Shelley Duvall? It was. Shelley Duvall was in The Shining. She played Wendy. And you see at times when Kubrick is giving out to her because she's acting up or not doing what she's supposed to do. And it's all very bleak and all very difficult and all very hard work, you know what I mean? Not that anybody ever suggested that acting isn't hard work, but there's nothing glamorous about it. And again, knowing one or two actors and actresses over the years, they say, no, it isn't glamorous. Looks magnificent on screen, but there's nothing glamorous about the production of it. So if you haven't seen Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, the making of, made by Vivian Kubrick, who must have ran around when they were on location in the UK in the Overlook Hotel. I think, no, it wasn't in the UK, was it? Where was it? Was. They filmed in a soundstage, didn't they? For the interior of the Overlook Hotel. I think it was done in London. I should know this because I'm a huge Stephen King fan and I've seen The Shining a million times. And it's not very glamorous and it's not very easy. And Vivian is good. But somebody has mentioned on Twitter, they've said, Stanley Kubrick filmed the moon landings. I don't think he did. I used to think the moon landings were faked, because I interviewed a man called Bart Sabrell, who made a wonderful film called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. And it's a brilliant film. And I suggest, if you've never seen it, you get a pen and you take down the name of it. A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. Now, I've interviewed Bart Sabrell 3 or 4 times about the film for different radio stations. And Bart is lovely. In fact, he was on this programme back in 2014. And he makes many claims, does Bart. One being, you can't get through the Van Allen radiation belt. You can't. Right? He says. And I, you know, a lot of scientists would agree. You can't get through the Van Allen radiation belt, which is between the Earth and the Moon. Right? Well, it surrounds the Earth, doesn't it? You can't do that. But he also took issue with many of the photographs taken by the astronauts and the shadows the astronauts were casting on the surface of the Moon, on the lunar surface. So he put all this together, and then he looked at some of the footage from inside the lunar module. Footage presumably shot by Armstrong and Collins and Aldrin. And he took issue with that, and he showed there were some anomalies with that footage as well. So I concluded that, first of all, Stanley Kubrick had nothing to do with it. I concluded, at least I don't think so. I concluded, and I know nothing, right? I know niente. What do I know? I concluded. Now, I'm being told by good friends of mine that they believe that Mr. Kubrick littered The Shining with clues to the moon landing fakery. And I believe there's a very good documentary out there which analyses The Shining and alleges that Stanley, genius as he was, but that he littered the Shining film with clues as to the fact that he was in on faking the moon landings. Now, all I can say is that I honestly don't necessarily believe Stanley Kubrick was in on it, or was in on faking the moon landings. But what do I know? I suppose I leave myself open now to be called all the names under the sun. Oh, you're a shill. Oh, you're this and you're that. I'm not. I've never seen any evidence of that. Doesn't mean I'm right, but I don't believe it anyway. But anyway, what I've come to believe is, I've come to believe that astronauts did make it to the moon. But the footage that we came to see later on, and all those photographs and those videos, I think it's possible the footage was taken somewhere else because of difficulties filming on the lunar surface environment. So I have no evidence now to support any of this. It's just my contention. You know, I think we did get there. And when I say we, man got there, whether it was Armstrong, Aldrin, Collins, whoever, we got there, but to sex it up, they might have shot footage on Earth. That's a possibility. But I think we did get there. We must get into this with David sometime before Christmas. The moon and Saturn and all of that, because it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. What a coincidence. Charlotte tells me that she was watching Alex Jones today. Charlotte. And Jones did a segment saying that the CIA approached Kubrick to ask him how he knew some of the information he portrayed in his films. Well, Charlotte, if Alex Jones says it, it must be true, he says sarcastically. Phil Turner tweets that The Shining was filmed in the UK because Kubrick disliked flying. How about getting Vivian on for a Kubrick-themed night, Richie, says Phil. I think we might speak to Vivian on the programme in the future, but it won't be about her father and his filmmaking. It'll be about other things, to be honest, Phil. But, I've always thought they probably made it to the moon. And the reason I think that is because the moon, I subscribe to the theory the moon is something different than it appears to be. But whether or not all of that footage came from the surface of the moon or not is another question entirely. Right? But I always find it amusing when people, you know, they make grand declarations, grand proclamations about the moon and the landings. Like, they know everything. We don't know. You can suspect all you want. But knowing for a fact, my friend Jean Anne doesn't believe we went to the moon. And there are a lot of people like her. There are a lot of people who agree with her. She says The Shining is full of cryptic clues. And then she says, why did Stanley die so conveniently after finishing the film Eyes Wide Shut, which he made with Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise? Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people are asking those same questions. Jean Anne went on to say, they might have made it, but what we were shown was fake, she says. Now, I can go along with that. Excuse me, I can go along with that because I think with the audiovisual equipment they had available at that time, filming on the moon in difficult conditions, in zero gravity, virtually zero gravity conditions, I think would have been very difficult. And we know what the old system, what the old establishment is like, and we know that the establishment or the system is very much capable of faking footage elsewhere. But the leap to Stanley Kubrick was involved, there's no evidence. I believe the film about The Shining and the clues allegedly left in The Shining is very good. And it's worth a look. I've never seen it, it must be said. I'm sure it's very selectively edited to support the central thesis, which seems to be that Stanley was giving clues in The Shining. But why would he do that? He'd be putting his life at risk, wouldn't he? You know, if somebody said, look, Stanley, you're going to fake footage from the surface of the moon and you're going to do it for your country. Presuming, by the way, that Stanley said, all right, let's do it then. Why would he be stupid enough to mess with that type of entity by putting himself at risk, by giving clues to it later on? Surely he'd be putting himself at risk, wouldn't he? Is what I'm saying. Devlin tweets, Richie, the real Overlook Hotel is on Mohonk Mountain, upstate New York, above New Paltz. I've been there. And Dirty Dancing was filmed there as well, says Devlin. Thanks for that, Devlin. Yeah. And my friend, These Are the Damned on Twitter, has just tweeted, a funny thing happened on the way to the moon, so I've retweeted it. It's well worth a look, by the way. And Bart might be worth getting back on the programme. It's been so long since Bart Sabrell was on this programme. But he's a lovely fella, Bart. Lovely guy. And he's absolutely committed to his theory that we never ever made it to the moon and the whole thing was faked. Bart contends, as you won't be surprised, it was all about the space race. The Americans couldn't lose out to the Russians. The Russians couldn't make it to the moon before the Americans. They couldn't do it, therefore they faked it. That's what Bart says. Bart famously got slapped in the face by, was it Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin? I think it might have been Neil Armstrong, slapped him in the mouth. Bart approached him at some signing event, at some function, and I think he asked Neil Armstrong to swear on the Bible that he went to the moon, and Neil Armstrong gave him a left hook, I think. A grumpy old Neil Armstrong some years ago. It's a fascinating subject. It's a fascinating subject. But When I was communicating with Vivian on Twitter privately, I said, you know, you've got so much interest in many of the subjects we're discussing on this programme and other programmes that she listens to. Why don't we get you on sometime to give us an insight into why you're interested in these subjects? I won't be boring you asking you the same questions you've been asked about your dad all your life. Why would I do that? So she said she'd like to come on sometime in the future. But I did say, and I repeat, I won't be. It was Buzz Aldrin, by the way. Buzz smacked Bart in the puss for saying, swear on the Bible that you went to the moon. As if Buzz Aldrin was part of faking the moon landings, as if he would be worried about blasphemy and swearing on the Bible. You know what I mean? If he's going to fake the moon landings, he's going to put his hand on a book and say, yeah, I swear on the Bible I went to the moon. There's also another theory that Armstrong, Aldrin and Collins have been controlled into believing they were on the moon. Now, that interests me. And that when Buzz Aldrin gave him a smack, he was genuinely pissed off with the crazy conspiracy theorists, right? Because they've been programmed into believing that they made it to the moon. But we'll never know, will we? It's funny, isn't it, that 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, I can't remember when, but they talked about going back to the moon within 20 years. And you're like, well, why didn't you go? Why didn't you go to the moon? Why didn't you go to the moon tomorrow if you could make it to the moon? You know? Madness. I mean, it's utterly madness. I've just had a lovely message from Vivian Kubrick, by the way, who, God love and God bless the wonderful Vivian Kubrick. She was calling my mobile phone number, but my phone has been on silent in the studio, and she was going to jump into the programme. She was going to jump in and have a conversation with me about what we've been talking about. But because it seems everything is down, my Skype and landline, the whole thing is down, so I can't do anything about that. I've apologised to Anomaly. He'll be back on ASAP. And I can't take Vivian on the air because the phone system has gone absolutely, everything has just gone belly up. But thank you, Vivian, who's listening to the programme and was willing to come on and have a chat with us. Murphy's Law, eh? We've had just one of those bloody days, haven't we? So that's my contention anyway, for what it's worth. We'll get Bart on in the future. My contention is they did make it to the moon, and the atmosphere was a difficult place to make very good films in that they could triumphantly display to the world's media. So they faked a bit of footage. And it's not because I don't want to offend Vivian or anybody else, but I genuinely couldn't see them approaching Stanley Kubrick. And even if they did, and Stanley did it, he wouldn't be putting clues into The Shining and elsewhere, lest he be visited by men in dark coats at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? He says. So that's just my contention. But look, we'll explore this in the future. We'll get Vivian on to talk about other things. Maybe she'll talk about that in the very near future. And we'll certainly be returning to Anomaly in the next day or two. I'm very sorry about this, by the way. We were due to speak with the producer, the hip-hop artist, the poet, and the writer, Anomaly, and the broadcaster. And I was looking forward to it, but I've got a big communication issue here. No pun intended. So I can't do anything tonight other than just wind up the programme, because we're nearly out of time anyway. God bless Vivian for giving me a ring there. I'm chuffed with that. That she would try and ring into the programme to bail me out. Jean-Anne says, Neil Armstrong's parrot speech is another clue. It's on YouTube someplace, she says. Apparently, in a speech, Neil Armstrong said, parrots can't fly very far and they repeat what they're told. Now, Jean-Anne said she's paraphrasing that. But of course, if he said something like that, he might be giving a clue that something isn't right with the moon landing story, but I'm sure Neil Armstrong is not stupid. He might also be just throwing something out there to fan the flames. And it's funny with people when they get something into their mind and it must be true, because it's in my mind, therefore it must be true. They can't imagine that the likes of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and others who went to the moon or didn't, or did go to the moon or didn't, depending on your take on it, they might be gently pulling people's legs by throwing little phrases into interviews or whatever just to keep the old conspiracy going, you know. But what do I know? It seems I'm in the minority amongst my own listenership. My listeners firmly believe that we didn't ever get to the moon. There you go. But it's funny, again, to contradict my own thought process on this, Obama saying a few years ago, we'll go back to the moon in 20 years. I'm like, why don't you go next month? Why don't you go next year? And send amazing footage from the lunar surface at that particular time. But see, I think the real reason, it's got nothing to do with Stanley Kubrick, it's got nothing to do with they didn't make it to the moon. The real reason, I believe, and I see I'm going to come off even more crazy than Bart Sabrell, the real reason is because I believe the moon is something completely different. It doesn't belong in our orbit. What do I know about science and astrology and, astronomy, I should say. What do I know about the galaxy, our universe? I only know what I've been taught in school and what I've read in books. But the moon is anomalous, isn't it? The moon is weird. Doesn't look like it belongs there in relation to other moons orbiting other planets. And some very learned men and women who come on this program over the years, they believe the moon is something very different to what we've been told it is, which is a natural orbiting satellite. And I'm being told by many of you, NASA stands for never a straight answer. There's a lot to be said about that as well. Right, that's kind of it then. I enjoyed the first hour. I enjoyed chatting to you. I'm sorry about Anomaly. We'll get him on ASAP. My engineer will be around tomorrow to sort out whatever issues I'm having. We don't often have issues. In fact, it's a very rare thing. We have state-of-the-art equipment here. We have the best of the best. And I don't know why it went wrong. But we'll fix it and we'll start again tomorrow. Listen, we'll be uploading the first hour of the programme. Some really interesting information in the first hour of the programme. Do share it when you see it on Podomatic and on YouTube. Big apologies to Anomaly, who I was very much looking forward to speaking with. I think he's up for tomorrow or Wednesday. We'll get him on and we'll chat with him. We'll find out more about him. And in the meantime, I'm just going to love you and leave you. Thanks for your patience. Big shout out to Jean Ann for her help in Cleggan, and to Vivian for the lovely attempts to connect with the programme a few minutes ago. Vivian, if I'd tried to answer your call, it wouldn't have worked. Everything went bang today. So all we can do now, I suppose, is play some music and get out of Dodge. Get the hell out of Dodge, as it were. So, and I've got to go to work on fixing this problem and getting the podcast up. Right. Finishing with this one from U2. This is one, and that's it. I'll see you tomorrow at 7 p.m. British summertime for what's left of it. Thanks again to Anomaly, Jean-Ann, Vivian, and to you for listening. Thank you. See you tomorrow.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You say, won't love.